Maboff!
This is Scammapalooza. My name is Nicholas J. Johnson. For more information on today's show, check out conman.com.au. Simon Pampiner is a force of nature. He's a numbers man, a former Australian numeracy ambassador, mathematician and comedian. On today's show, Simon and I delve deep into the world of probability, paradoxes and pi to figure out why it's so easy to deceive some people with simple mathematics. Something just doesn't add up here. My name is Nicholas J. Johnson and this is Scammapalooza. So you present yourself supposedly as a mathematician, but I have seen you be hilarious on several occasions, and I don't know whether someone can be hilarious and a mathematician. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to hit you up to start with, yes, with a mathematical slash logical conundrum, and then your job will be to unlock the conundrum, solve it, or perhaps tell me why it's unsolvable, because that might be a thing as well.
What are you going to ask me?
What
this
am I going to ask?
This is like my whole reputation on the line.
All
here.
On the line.
This could be like it could have an answer. It couldn't have an answer.
Mm-hmm. To be honest, you probably heard this one.
Okay.
Three men go to a hotel.
Hang on. Three.
Yep.
Base 10.
Exactly. Yeah, we're working with a base 10 number system. I could tell you the puzzle in binary, but I'm not. Three men go into a hotel.
Yep,
and they book a room.
Uh-huh.
And the clerk says, very well, that will be $30. Now, leaving aside the fact that a hotel room shouldn't cost, for three men, $30,
yes,
middle of the day, it's a bit sus. Moving on from that. The men each pay $10 and they head up to the room. At that moment, the clerk has a sudden realization that it's a Tuesday, and on Tuesday, the room is only $25.
That's right.
She's just ripped off the three men $5.
That's right.
So she calls over the bellboy, gives the bellboy five, mm-hmm, $1 coins, so $5 in total.
Yes, that's right.
And says, can you go and give this to the men? Halfway up, the bellboy says, wait, hang on, how am I going to split $5 equally among three men?
That's right.
So the bellboy goes, here's a plan, knocks on the door, gives each of the men $1 each.
That's right.
And then pockets the remaining $2. So, each of the men has paid for their hotel room, $9 each.
Mm-hmm.
The bellboy has pocketed $2. That only equals $29. But if you remember, it was $30 at the beginning of the puzzle. What happened to the missing dollar? Your time starts now.
What's happened?
Mm-hmm.
Were you adding up wrong? That's what's happened.
Is that your answer?
Yeah, of course. Well, because you're adding up when you should be adding down.
You're a genius. That's correct. Yeah, that's totally the answer. I thought you would at the very least think about it for a moment, but instead you've just...
But the really big one of these problems that you just get on the street was the Monty Hall problem.
I
don't know if we want to talk about that.
No, let's go. Let's do that. Because the whole reason why I've got you here is because numbers are confusing and mathematics, mm-hmm, are confusing. And what happens, mm, is we learn at a young age certain ideas of how numbers are supposed to work. You know, we're told about patterns and we're told about multiplication and addition and ways of thinking. And that seems to then lead us to go down the garden path in later life and end up with us getting scammed and conned by nefarious people who understand probability and numbers and statistics better than we do.
Absolutely.
And I think the Monty Hall dilemma is as better place as any to start. Do you want,
yeah,
I feel like I love the Monty Hall dilemma.
Yes.
And so I want to hear you explain it.
Well,
I have no idea what the Monty Hall I'm very familiar with it, but you know, you explain it, and I'll
you
tell
you about it, yeah,
and I'll,
yeah,
tell if you're right or not.
Well, it is actually, gambling is actually a great way for people to get into mathematics in later years. No, because it's like people want to win. Like all my family is like, you're a smart maths guy, Simon. Why aren't you making money out of gambling? And I'm like, well, I'm interested in doing other things than just making money out of gambling. But you know, it's Australia. If you make money out of gambling, you're a legend. But anyway, the whole thing with the Monty Hall problem is I actually did this outside the casino here in Melbourne, and I was doing a video. It was like, I actually never completed it because like it really went off the rails. But I actually did this whole thing where I was showing just regular punters coming out of the casino. I was showing them the Monty Hall problem, and the reaction I had was just full on. Like people got really angry. They got really angry with me that what I was doing.
So historically, it's made people very angry. It caused massive rifts amongst mathematicians
around
the world when it first came out. So take us through it.
So take it a step back. Okay, so the idea is that you've got three choices, right?
The name comes from a game show.
A game show, I think.
Yeah, Monty Hall was the host of a game show.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Mm. You had three doors to choose from, and behind the door, one of the doors is a Ferrari, and behind the other two doors are goats.
And just to be clear, you as the contestant want to win the Ferrari, not
you. You do want to win the Ferrari. Because it's just random, you apply a random probability of 1 in 3. Mm-hmm. So you've got a 1 in 3 chance of getting the right thing, or the getting Ferrari. What you want, yeah. The Ferrari. And so you make your choice. And this is the setup here. So the setup then is that Monty Hall, he then says, that's your choice. I am now going to reveal the door that has a goat behind it.
Yeah.
It's going to be at least
there's always a goat.
But there's always a goat.
You always have a goat spare.
There's always a goat. And you should have, in case of emergency.
It's good advice for life.
It's always good to have a goat. Mm-hmm. And so
I keep one in the back of my Ferrari.
That's actually a good place to put them. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so then the quizmaster, Monty Hall, says, would you like to change your mind? I'm going to give you the option now to change your mind.
Mm-hmm. Now, and at this point, you have two doors to choose from. You've got the one that you're on.
Mm.
And then you've got the other one. One of the doors has a goat behind it. One of the doors has a Ferrari behind it.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And the dilemma is, do you change your mind? Do you stick with the original door?
Yeah,
or
that's right.
Do you change to another one? And and the answer that leaps into my mind, the logical answer that everyone says, if you are presented with two doors, one is a winner, one is a loser, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's a flip of a coin. It's a 50-50 guess.
Yes.
You can choose this door. You can choose that door. And that is what everyone assumed was the correct answer.
That's right. Yeah. That's what you think it is when you hear it. And then you start making from that logical deduction. You do illogical things like going, well, I don't want to change my luck, or you have an irrational.
Yes.
Thought come in, which you've sort of give equal value.
Yeah.
Which you shouldn't.
But, I mean, this is the interesting thing, is that historically with this is when, so you had Parade Magazine had Ask Marilyn, and that was a weekly comment, a column with Marilyn Vos Savant. A reader wrote in and said, can you explain to me, here is the puzzle.
This is the Monty Hall.
Yeah.
Right.
What is the correct thing to do?
Yes.
And she came up with the actual correct answer, which is that, drum roll, and correct me if I'm wrong, you should always change your mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the reasoning behind why you should change your mind is what has stumped mathematicians that they cannot get their head around. And so she basically published her answer, and she said, you should change your mind. You're twice as likely to be on a wrong door as you are to be on a right door. Change your mind. Give me your explanation.
Okay, so my explanation, well, what's the most likely thing that you've done first up? So when you made your first choice, what was the most likely thing? The most likely thing is you've got the wrong door, because there's two chances out of three that you've got a goat. There's only one chance out of three that you've got the Ferrari. And so then if the guy removes one of the options, then in actual fact, that other door has a 2/3 chance of being what you want.
Yeah.
So the best way to think about this, because I realize it's actually... Part of the paradox is the fact that there's only three.
Yeah.
So it's actually quite hidden what's going on. But the best way to think about it, and I've since seen other people rediscover this, and, you know, it sounds like I came up with this, but no, I thought this way. I thought, no, not three doors, 100 doors.
Yeah.
So you've got a Ferrari behind one door, and then you've got 99 goats. That's a lot of goats.
Yeah.
And then it's the same situation. Make your choice. So you make your choice. And then 98 doors are opened up.
Yep, leaving just two.
Leaving just two. 98 doors are opened up to reveal goats.
So at that point, you know that you are almost certainly wrong.
Exactly.
Because you're 99 out of one. You had a 1 in 100 chance.
One
to get
in a 100
it right.
chance of getting it right.
And so when you remove all but one, you remove every single possible wrong door that could be, except for one. The chances are it's the one that you've
it's
chosen.
It's very high.
Yeah.
And so then you start reducing that number down. The logic still applies until you get to the absolute lower limit, which is three. You can't do it any lower than three. So it's a beautiful problem, because it's taking that, you know, what seems very obvious when you're talking about a lot of doors, it brings it down to something where it suddenly gets quite murky. Like it starts to lose perspective, because it's just like, well, you've gotten rid of one of them. There's only two doors. It's a 50-50. What's the difference?
To me, the easiest way to sort of prove it wrong to someone is just to show them that there are is to do the hard yards and to go through every single option, because there are.
That's right.
There's only six options.
That's right.
You choose one of three doors.
Yeah.
And then you either change your mind or you don't.
Yeah.
And so if you've chosen, if you make your choice and you choose the Ferrari, then in two of the six, you should not change your mind, obviously.
Yep.
The other, you know, you have goat number two. If you choose goat number two, then obviously you should change your mind. If you choose goat number three, then you should change your mind as well.
Yep.
And
so that
gives you four times you should change your mind. And
exactly.
Two times you shouldn't change your mind. So change your mind.
That's right.
The thing is that the top mathematicians in the world hated Vos Savant for suggesting that the answer was anything other than it doesn't matter. It's a 50-50 bet. And here are some of the things they said. Oh. May I suggest that you obtain and refer to a standard textbook on probability before you try to answer a question of this type again? Scott Smith, also from University of Florida. You blew it. You blew it big. Since you seem to have difficulty grasping the basic principle at work, I'll explain. Then he explains it incorrectly. And says, and finishes up by saying, we have enough mathematical illiteracy in this country. We don't need the world's highest IQ propagating more. Shame.
Wow.
Shame.
Isn't that amazing? Well, you know, I have to say, I mean, I did very well at mathematics, and I studied mathematics to a high degree, an honors degree.
Yeah.
But I'm very, very good at algebra. I'm pretty good at geometry. Like, I'm very good, but I'm comparing myself to like
the
people
best.
Who do it. People who discover new stuff.
Yeah.
That's what I'm comparing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm very, very good at algebra. But I think I struggled with getting probability for a long time because I attacked it as an algebra problem. Because a lot of it is you know, described as algebra, where you have P and Q and P not Q and all this sort of jazz.
Yeah.
Sort of stuff that scares people.
Yeah.
But for me, I love it. But it actually came down, and you just nailed it before. I didn't want to interrupt your flow, but you nailed it where probability comes from. Probability is all about counting. But I'm serious.
It is, yeah.
It is actually, counting is the only way you can understand the odds, because you did it beautifully. It's like the reason why it works is because you think about every single possibility, and if every possibility has an equal chance of happening, because there's no, you know, it's not weighted in any way or anything like that, then it's like, well, this is in the minority. So therefore, and you just logically go to that next step. And it is, counting is counting is something that people just don't do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I actually came up with something that I got completely slammed for by the nerds, where I made the audacious criticism of George Lucas, saying that he stuffed up naming his droids.
Ooh.
Which caused a lot of problems. I did it as a joke.
Yeah.
But a lot of these nerds don't have the humor. Well, you know, they're kind of somewhere on the
spectrum.
There you go.
No, yep.
And so anyway, I actually was looking in the literature on the whatever Wikipedia, whatever it is.
Sure.
And you look at the way that like the droids are named, R2-D2 and C-3PO.
Yep.
Okay. So if we work with the assumption that they're using, like, you know, English letters and digits between 0 and 9, you then have, you know, you have 26 times 10 times 26 times 10 and whatever permutation is, letter, number, whatever. And if you talk about every single permutation you can have of letters and numbers, you get this tiny amount. Like, you know, number plates in Australia, there's far more number plates possible than there are, you know, these droids. And these droids are supposed to cover an entire galaxy. And so I just made the argument of going, your number system is wrong. Like, you actually need, I think I worked it out, you need, like, you, everything needs to have, like, you know, like a serial number of 10 digits.
It's like trying to choose a secure password. Like, no, you don't choose a, you know, they'll never let you have a four digit or four character password, like RTD2. Like, that's ridiculous. No, there's the bit strength on that would just be so low. That's, you know.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And so, it's the same thing, but it's just counting. Like, George Lucas never counted.
He never did the math.
Never
did the numbers. So hang on, I'm going to get out a calculator and I'm going to figure out the exact number of droids, that you can have. I assume you've already done this number.
How many
letters in the alphabet?
Well, we're going to say 26. But we've got to state our assumptions.
Okay.
Because you're going to get nerd hate out of this.
Sure. Yep.
Because we're attacking something which is akin to a religion.
Sure. Yeah.
So, you know, it's like, so it's 26 times 10. 26 times 10.
Okay. Times 26.
Which should be, that's 26 squared.
All right. If you can give me the number, I'll be very impressed. But go on.
It's 25 plus 1 squared, 25 squared.
Can I say this is the most riveting moment in this podcast so far, is listening to you doing mathematics in your head.
Sorry, 676?
Bang.
67600. There you go.
Got it. That's very impressive. I like how you just went all calm and quiet to bask in the glory of your mathematics.
Because I was thinking, let me try and do this in my head.
But just going back to the password issue, because yes. We should vaguely touch on the theme of cons and scams. So if I was to, if we were to sort of say, okay, you can have a password, you can't have capital letters, it can only be four digits long, and it's got to be a mix, it can be a mix of numbers or letters, but it's your choice what you do, then there are 1.67
So that's 30 million. So that's 36 to the power 4.
Yeah. Yep. So it would give us 1.6 million different passwords. And
that's not enough.
It's not enough. No, because you can write a program that could test all of those options within,
quickly.
Very, very quickly within a few minutes. That's why we have that annoying thing of choose a password, which is a mix of letters and numbers that is at least 8 digits long.
Is it really that annoying?
Well, it is if you have to try and remember them all. Do you want to know my system for coming up with passwords that you can easily remember?
Okay, I'll tell you mine if it's different.
Okay, let's. Well, okay,
do you want to know my password?
Let's count to three. Both say our passwords. Okay. All right. Give me a song. Like name a song that you quite like.
The single ladies.
All the single ladies. You'd have then the lyrics for that song.
All the single ladies.
That works.
Put your hands up.
Okay, let's go. All the single ladies. Put your hands up.
Yep.
Yeah. So right there, you have you can have a.
Mm-hmm.
So you make your password ATSLPYHU.
Yep.
Then you go through and go, well, hang on, all, I can replace the A with an at symbol.
Yes.
If you've got an I, you can replace it with a 1 if you want to.
You do a bit of the leet.
Exactly. Just you a, hint, a, of, a hint of elitism. So and if you pick a song that's related to, I don't know, like if you sort of your banking password would be, it may be a lyric from Hey Big Spender or, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah, that's I have funny. An obsession with passwords because I have a terrible, terrible, terrible memory. And so the idea of remembering passwords is very stressful for me. So coming up with systems for remembering the important ones.
How do you have a terrible memory when you're, like, so awesome at doing magic stuff?
Well, that's, again, the system's in place. You know,
really?
To remember. If I have a system, I'm okay. But if the idea is that you get introduced to someone at a party or someone says, hey, here's a phone number, remember it, and you don't employ the system, goes out my head straight away. I don't have that ability to.
Because I memorized 100 digits of pi.
Nice.
Which was actually a lot easier than I thought it was going
to
be.
Yeah. That's why I have Kevin Trudeau, who he's now in prison, but he used to have the memory, mega memory system. And he was selling the most basic pegging system in the world, just this really simple, easy system that anyone can learn. But he was selling it for a fortune and people were lining up because it looked like a miracle.
Mm.
And then he went to jail for some sort of fraud. I've forgotten exactly what it is because I have a terrible memory. Anyway, let's.
Well, can I just say, actually leading on to that, it's that whole fraud thing about selling something which seems obvious or seems too good to be true. Like, I think the classic one is I saw this recently on a show, which I can't actually talk about. It was like an inside thing, but I saw this thing on a show about a guy talking about gambling and how to win at lotto.
Yeah.
And his system is the way that you win at lotto. This is like cross lotto or something. So you get to choose 6 numbers out of 36. Say, let's just say that, for example. What you do is you look back historically at what numbers have come up, right? And because each number is supposed to have an equal probability, you then look at the numbers that have occurred more often.
Mm-hmm.
And what you do is you bet on the numbers that haven't come up as much. And that's his system.
I am rage stroking so hard right now because this is the meat and potatoes of just sorry, I can't even speak at that stupidity.
Yes.
Because every sort of gambling system, every fraudulent gambling system basically operates on this same idea of taking advantage of that. And that is the gambler's fallacy.
That's the gambler's fallacy.
It's
that's
the
exactly
idea
right.
that numbers are due a win.
So yes, that's right.
If we're flipping coins and it's heads 20 times in a row, then some people say, well, it's on a streak, it's on a hot run, and
right.
so it's going to be heads again.
Yep.
Or they do the opposite and say, well, tails is due for a win, so I'm going to bet on tails.
Yeah, that's right. It is really hard to get your head around because
it
really jams us. It gets us. And this is something that's amazing because, you know, it goes back to what was said about counting. The only way you can really understand the gambler's fallacy or not be tricked by it or kind of sucked in by it, is to actually think. You actually have to think your way out of it.
Yeah.
And the only way you can do that is by counting.
Mm.
And it goes back to, it's just the same, it's the same kind of logic with the Monty Hall problem. It's actually engaging the power of our brains in pattern seeking. So there's this bizarre thing going on. There is the certainty of the game you're playing, meaning that if heads are going to come up, if there's one in two chances, the longer you play that, you'll just have equal heads and tails. Like, you'll never be able to get a head, pardon the pun. But if you try and understand it because of randomness, you will be able to see patterns, because that's what we're geared to do. It's like, I can see something here. I can see that every... It's like head, tails, head, tails, head, tails, head. I know what's going to happen next. But that's because you're human, and we're geared to see patterns. Like, we have to... Once you know a language and you see, you know, a word, your name, you can... It's so hard to not see your name.
Yeah. I mean, it's why we see the Virgin Mary in toasted cheese sandwiches.
That's right.
And,
yeah, it's
and
a miracle.
Alien faces on Mars. Yeah.
It's the patterns.
Yeah. I guess the thing that I often struggle with is that often you will have people who will figure out a system that works. People who go through the Gambler's fallacy, come out the other side, you know, a la the end of 2001, A Space Odyssey, and have an epiphany where they figure out what the real system is. So there were some MIT students who made, I think it was $9 million on the Massachusetts lottery. You know, as you said, the lottery, you cannot pick, there are no lucky numbers. Obviously, there's no number. If there is a number that comes out that is more likely to come out than another number, then you have a broken or rigged game.
Yeah, it's weighted.
It's weighted. There's something wrong with the game.
That's right.
And with poker machines, if they get to the end of the month and they see that, well, hang on, this number, this has happened more often than it should, then to them, that is a problem that needs to be fixed.
Anyway.
So this particular lottery was set up in a way in which the jackpot would go up and down depending on how much had been won or lost. But it would reach a point where they were obliged to give a certain size prize for a certain amount of money bet at a certain time of year, if certain stars haven't aligned in a certain way, for example.
Right, okay.
And at some point, you are statistically more likely, not necessarily to win the jackpot, but to win some sort of prize.
Yeah.
And so these mathematicians figured out, crunched the numbers, looked at all the records, and figured out the perfect time to buy the tickets, and came in and spent, didn't come in and buy one ticket for the right winning numbers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They
came in and
they bought hundreds and hundreds of tickets.
Yeah, of course.
And did this, you know, repeatedly, and walked away with a total of $9 million before they were sort of told, no, you can't. And that's what happens, is that if you do come up with a system, you will be told, no, you can't gamble anymore, or no, you won't be able to do this anymore.
Right.
And you'll be kicked out. And it's that fact that con artists will then rely on, because they can then stand outside a casino, sometimes literally, and say, look, I've got a system that always wins, but I've been kicked out because they recognize me. Do you want to go in and check it out for me? Which is a scam that you'll find in the best-selling, critically acclaimed novel Chasing the Ace by Nicholas J. Johnson, available in all bookstores now and from conman.com.au.
I've heard about that. Apparently, it's good.
Mm. Oh, you haven't read it?
Well, I'm still waiting for my insider copy. But anyway,
sure, go on.
That's interesting. Well, going back to when I was doing the Monty Hall.
Yeah,
that was outside of the casino.
Mm.
I actually was trying to help people understand, you know, the problem with gambling by making them win. So we were playing with 5-cent coins. But I did the same thing. I said, the Ferrari is underneath one of these cups, and then there's two goats. And I just played it out with them. But I said to them, the way you can win here is actually you have to just keep playing. Because I'm going to give you the odds of winning based on 1/3, but it's really 2/3.
Yeah.
Which is the way you win in gambling.
Yeah.
Because that's the weird thing about gambling, is that you're given odds, and the odds are based on, not thinking about horse racing, because that's actually far more complicated. But if we're just thinking about like games in a casino.
Yeah.
You're talking about odds based on the likelihood of something happening, right? And if you have that, they give you that money, basically.
Yeah.
But see, if you rig it, and if somehow you get better odds than the event that you're trying to win for, then that's how you make money. So it's subtle, because it's like there's odds and there's probabilities. People got really angry with me telling me that this was BS, what I was doing. And I'm like, but I'm showing you, it's like, you know, you keep playing 5 cent coins and I'm going to have to keep coughing up money because it's arbitrage. That's what arbitrage is. It's like guaranteed how to win.
Yeah.
But that's the, that's probably why they were at the casino, because they think they understand gambling, where it's like all about the details. It's all about an individual game. And that's how you lose.
Well, yeah, that's right. And it's the idea. I mean, gambling is one of the few things in the world which you get worse at by doing it more. You know, everything else in life, the more you do it, the better you get at it. With gambling, no. The more you gamble, the more money you will lose.
And
there is, if you keep on doing it, there's no payday that's going to come and save the day for you. You're just going to keep losing money.
The odds of you losing get higher and higher and higher the more you play. The more you play, the closer you get to actually the odds.
And is this the law of large numbers? Is this where that comes into play? The idea that if we were to flip a coin right now, between the two of us, I'm just say I win. So there we go. I've won 100% of the time. And if we were to, if I was to flip 10 in a row, I might win 8 of those 10 purely by chance. That'll be 80% of the time.
Yeah.
But the more coins that we flip and the more often we do it,
yes,
eventually that's going to come down to I win 50% of the time, you win 50% of
the time.
That's
right. Yeah.
Because that's what the odds say.
That's right. But then we've got to keep in mind that you've got to have skin in the game the whole time, which is another thing with the gambler's fallacy. The gambler's fallacy is like, I've seen a pattern here and I'm choosing to bet now.
Inserting yourself into the pattern.
Inserting yourself in, but it's just, you're doing it once. The only way you can really win at gambling is by what's called arbitrage, is that you basically know somehow to read the system and get the odds on your side, and you just keep playing because you can. Impossible for a sustained business like someone like David Walsh down in Tassie, who's made millions and millions of dollars, if not, he's, I don't know if he's up to a bill.
Yeah,
but he does that by just being really smart about, betting as much money as you can. If you have a 1% advantage, you bet as much money as you can. It doesn't matter who wins or loses. You've rigged it. But
that's also what casinos do, is that they will give
you. Yes, and that's why they make so much money.
As long as they have a 1% advantage, they don't care.
They don't care.
And so they will pay you, you know, for every $100 that you give them, they are more than happy to give you back $99 because they know that in the end they're going to get that $1. That's one of the reasons why. Now, you can maybe explain this to me. Casinos on ships. So on cruise ships,
yes,
that a lot of them don't do very well financially because one, they have limited opening hours. They can't be open 24 hours a day.
Oh.
And two, people get off the ship, if that makes sense.
Are you talking about people winning back their losses?
Yeah. People trying to win back their losses, but failing. I don't know. From a mathematical standpoint, does that sound right to you?
From a mathematical standpoint, that didn't actually make any sense.
Because I thought that maybe, you know, when you go into international waters, they have like different laws.
Yes.
I thought perhaps the laws of probability might be different on the high seas. Is that, that's not a thing?
I don't know.
Okay.
The laws of probability change on the high seas.
Is there a book? You've got a lot of books here on math.
Tell you what. Look, gambling is a fascinating thing because of the amount of money that goes through. But I mean, I can't gamble. I cannot partake in gambling.
No.
Like, I think as far as I go is I'd get maybe a dollar scratchy.
But that's nice. Someone said to me, and it's a beautiful phrase, a turn of phrase, and it said that reason why we gamble is not necessarily to win or lose, but it's to get an itch scratched. And it's that, human, evolutionary speaking, have always had risk in our lives. We've had danger. You know, there's a saber-toothed tiger. We're not sure, do we go left, do we go right? And we take a gamble and go left when we survive.
What would
happen if we gone right? Well, incredible. And we get that rush.
Yeah.
And now, because we live safe, happy lives, we don't need... You know, we don't have an outlet for that sense of risk. And so when you buy your $2 scratchy, you're not buying a chance to win money. You're buying just getting the risk centers of your brain stimulated.
Activated
for a couple of minutes. And if you win or lose, it's almost irrelevant.
Well, you've made me realize that I actually have enough risk in my life.
Mm.
Well, I've experienced enough risk because I've gone into performing.
Yes.
And so I think the major, you know, people talk about jumping out of an aeroplane or bungee jumping, but I have gone in front of
like
200 14-year-old girls doing a maths performance and having their faces looking at me like, who the hell is this?
What is this all about?
And, you know, and I've overcome that fear.
Yeah.
And that anxiety. And the rush is amazing where you have an idea and of going, I think I maybe can do this in your quiet moment when you're by yourself. And then when you're actually forced and put in that situation to actually have everything telling you, you should just turn around and leave, man. This is not good. And then you go through with it and then it works out. Once you understand maths, you've done as much maths as I have, and I've done a lot. Yeah, the idea of gambling is just absolutely ridiculous.
It is, yeah. I mean, there are people, though, who use their abilities with math, as we talked about, the people at Massachusetts Lottery, in order to win. So, yeah, card counters or people who figure out a system. But I suppose in those examples, they're not really gambling because once they've figured out how to push the odds into their favor, they know that they just keep
that's
on.
That's true.
You keep on, you know, it's an interest.
It's arbitrage.
It's an interest. It's a high interest account. You know, you just keep popping the money in and the money will, you know, keep building up. And it's,
well, you know, the actual link between the financial world and gambling is scary.
I don't know. I mean, we never say that a casino is gambling. We never consider what they're doing. The casino business is not a gamble. In fact, it's one of the best business decisions
thing.
you can make.
Yeah.
So to me, I think, for it to be gambling, the odds have to be against you. You know, if you and I play, you know, Russian roulette, that's a bad example. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to bring back those memories of your time
in Vietnam. It always comes down to Vietnam concentration camp.
Yeah, yeah, that was a weird Kentucky tour you went on. So.
Okay. What a streak that was.
Yeah, but if we're playing a game and the odds are against you, that's gambling. Yes. When the odds are in your favour, that is it. There's, you know, there's a famous quote which I love, which is, in every bet there is a fool and a thief. And it's, you know, in every bet there's one person who is taking advantage of the other person's inability to understand basic probability.
But you know what's really interesting is that it flies in the face of the wisdom of, like, the only time you lose is if you give up.
Yeah.
Because, you know, say having, you know, making a go in an entertainment career or whatever, you know, it's like, really, it comes down to doing something enough times till you get your shot or a chance.
Yep.
And then you have to make the best of that opportunity. But see, it's different to gambling because you can play and play and play and sure you might win once, but the amount you're losing each time is always going to far outweigh what you've won that one time.
Yep.
And this is totally financial because obviously you're going to feel amazing when you do win.
Yeah.
But yeah, and this is the other thing is, like, in life where you should keep trying and trying and trying, the difference is that it's not gambling because if everything's going all right with you, you should be getting better, you should be getting smarter, you should be getting more intelligent or, you know, more worldly. It's that whole thing about the famous entrepreneurs, like Steve Jobs had to fail miserably before he could be really successful. This is what's so interesting about gambling is that it touches on so many positive things in life, taking risks, you know, the thrill of the win or not giving up, but it screws it all. Don't give up. You know, it's like, no, you should give up.
You should give up.
Because you've lost your car, dude. How are you going to get home?
that's right. You know? But the casinos are always there to take advantage of you.
Yeah.
Do you think that taking advantage of people's lack of understanding of probability is unethical? Are you a con artist if you're rorting someone out of their money because they don't understand math, or is it just their fault for not paying attention in Mrs. Henriksen's year 9 probability class?
That's pretty big, man. That's a big call. Because, you know, what's a mortgage?
Oh, wow, yeah, that's it.
Because, the mortgage, yeah. Because how many people do you know who actually understand their mortgage?
I don't understand my mortgage.
Why'd you get one for?
Because I wanted a pretty house. And I wanted somewhere to plant daffodils in the front yard. Or, yeah.
And
because the missus just wouldn't shut up about it.
That's amazing maths going on there. And the huge amount of money that's in the real estate sector is based on, I think, a lot to do with the fact that people don't really understand what they've signed up for. So when it comes to gambling, well, people are doing what they think is right, and it's a free society, so we should let them do what they are doing. But the only way to really come against it is, or to fight it, is to actually educate people. So people have to get numerate to be able to deal with problem gambling.
I always finish up with what I call the con man's dictionary, where I surprise/hijack my guest with a word. And then they need to try and either define the word correctly or make up a better answer.
Okay. So
what is an anti-martingale system?
An anti?
Anti-martingale system.
Martin?
Martingale.
Anti-martingale. Martingale worked out how to beat something.
Mm-hmm.
And he was killed by the mob.
Sure.
And so the anti-martingale system is how to not end up dead by exposing loopholes within within a game.
That's brilliant. It's just not brilliant. I don't know why I said that. That's the stupid. That's perhaps the stupidest. You're a very smart man. You've said a lot of smart things today, but that's the dumbest thing you've said. All right. Now let me. Okay. I went with anti-martingale because I figured you would know the martingale system.
I don't know martingale. Oh,
so doesn't matter. Let's move on.
Oh, it's like a surname.
Yes.
Oh. Well, I wouldn't have given that ridiculous answer.
So, an anti-martingale system is even more ridiculous. So, the idea is every time you lose, you just keep betting the same amount of money. But every time you win, you double your bet. When you're on a run, you know, when you're going to keep winning.
When you're hot. Yeah.
You're taking advantage of your hotness, of your heat. So, it is a stupid system for stupid people.
Oh, my goodness.
Brilliant.
See, I actually need to learn more about gambling. I don't know enough.
Where can people find you online if they want to look at you? And
if they want to look at me?
Yeah.
I think I do my best work on Twitter, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's at Mathemaniac, and there's heaps of interesting stuff. I've actually posted some interesting stuff about gambling in the past. You have to kind of dig deep. I'll bring it up now that we've done
just
this.
Just sort of pump it up to
the
top.
Yeah. Put it up the top.
Beautiful. Thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you.
But I'm not.
As always, you can find out more at conman.com.au. This has been Scammapalooza.